story, yours and hundreds of thousands of others. We are living to make sure the stories don't die. The stories, Rifat, are the ground, the foundation, the place where rebuilding begins. Your gravestone, Rifat, rising from the soft earth above so many who have no stones, whose stories we can only guess.
Wow. Well, that's Anita Barrows, and my name is Dennis Bernstein. The show is Flashpoints. Anita has been writing a poem every day of the genocide. Final words. We don't have any more time.
No more time.
People can come meet you in person.
Thank you, Dennis. Come to the reading and you'll hear more from both of us.
Thank you. And you're listening to Flashpoints.
And that does it for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Our theme music is written and produced by Charlie Lang. For questions, comments, email Dennis Bernstein at dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end of year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots independent community radio.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and accidentally skipping your friend's turn. I'm one of your hosts, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Nate?
I'm doing all right. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system on KBOO.fm. Just click the Chat With Us button in the lower right corner of the window. And before we get started, I'd like to send a happy birthday shout-out to Howard K., who is turning 94 today. Happy birthday, Howard! We are pleased to welcome... I thought you might chime
happy
in on
birthday,
that, James.
Happy birthday, Howard! Sorry.
Yeah.
All the way with the fairies.
Yeah. We are pleased to welcome Gina and Krista of Fascinary Games to the show. They are the designers of Mate, the party game for feral naturalists. Welcome to the show!
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Yeah. How did you get into the board gaming hobby, if you consider yourselves hobbyists?
Yeah, so we were just talking about this. So we're sisters, and we both were like, we can't even remember life before games. So we grew up playing games with our family since we were like toddlers, both published games. Uno was a big hit. Pig Mania, which is now called Pass the Pigs, was another favorite. And then we also created games as kids as well. So a lot of like paper, I remember at restaurants, like paper straws, we'd make little games with those, and then continued to play games with our family from there.
Yeah, and even our parents and grandparents played cribbage and backgammon on a nightly basis, and brought us into that ritual. And our mom's parents actually lived with us growing up, and they would play backgammon and cribbage every night and track wins over 100 games, and then whoever Wow. won the most would have to buy the other Dairy Queen. And so it just always was a big part of our life in a way that we connected with each other.
That's great. Have you played any of the new Uno variants that are out there?
So many.
I played Uno Dice. Honestly, though, the original just does it. There's a photo of me as a kid with my shirt off and with the Uno cards out. So we call it
just a whole mitt of cards.
That's great.
So like, so playing board games is like in your blood. It's been a part of your family for generations. That's awesome. Truly. So like, how did you, if you do have a gaming group, how did you manage to find one?
Yeah, I mean, I think it started with family, but I feel like we were thinking about this, and each phase of our lives, we can kind of think about like groups of friends or, you know, family that we played games with, and each phase of our lives is kind of marked by a different game. Like, it started with kids, like we said, we have three siblings, so there's five siblings total, and we would play like Risk and Monopoly and get into these huge fights as kids growing up. One of our brothers was like a notorious board game flipper, just like if you made the wrong move in Risk, it's over.
Yeah, and then I guess as we got older, I think looking back, in college, like I think a lot of our friends would play games. I lived in Saudi Arabia for a couple years and remember we would play Talisman just like into the night, 4 a.m., drinking tea with our friends there. So yeah, I think just every kind of like chapter of life is marked by games. And then now, I think back to more like chill and kid-friendly games. So yeah.
Yeah, because you have kids now, so your gaming group is kind of...
It's my gaming group is my 9-year-old, who is getting into more like fun strategy games now, which is cool.
Yeah, and I guess speaking of getting into them, do you have any favorite games or games that you would recommend anybody try?
Yes, so many. But when I was thinking, if I had to say one, so this is a very niche one. I'm curious if y'all have played before. So it's a 1991 puzzle game called Mind Trap. Yes. Okay. Oh. So this was a family favorite growing up. So it's a... Basically, it's like mysteries and logic problems, and one of my favorites still that actually made it into our the game we made is a Zoom guessing game. So it would like one of the card types in Mind Trap where it shows like a really zoomed in image, and you have to work together to try to figure out what the image is.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
The world building in Mind Trap is really incredible, even though it's just like a simple like. Murder mystery trivia, or not trivia, but like puzzle game. But they really build a world, and it's like so dramatic, unnecessarily so. But that's what makes it so fun, because it just pulls you and you get in the trap.
It does sound like a very 90s game.
Yes. It's so, yes, the niche. So if you ever see it at a thrift store, pick a copy.
Yeah.
That makes me wonder if you're like into the exit type of games that are out now.
Yes, very fun.
Or the whatever, escape room in a box.
Yes.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing. So, sorry, James, I'm like taking the next question.
Oh, no, you carry on. I'm just here in the corner.
I'm taking
about me.
So, what inspired you to make a party game about animal mating and anatomy?
Yes. So, it started in 2020. On Twitter, RIP, I came across a photo that was actually from a research study was a study by some researchers at Oregon State. So they did a research study where they saw three whales mating. And so I saw this photo, which was two giant whale penises, and then there was another belly up whale. So the study and the thread explained that when a female whale wants to conceive, she'll go to the surface of the ocean and invite multiple males to increase her chance of optimal fertilization. And I was just captivated, hooked by that. This was like during the pandemic, life was like overwhelming and boring. And so it like, I think sparked this random pandemic era interest. And then, yeah,
Yeah, I mean, I was living in Wisconsin at the time, and you were out here in Portland. And we had a group chat going with both of our partners and the two of us, and we just started sending photos back and forth, like immediately within 48 hours, just sending photos of animal mating and genitalia back and forth, because it was just so intriguing. Something about it was just so funny to us, but then also fascinating, like the depth of what was happening between those whales and in other instances. And so I think it just captivated us right away. And I think during the pandemic, you know, you're looking for ways to connect with people. And this was a way that, like, the two of us were connecting a lot. And so, like, literally within 48 hours of you coming across that photo, we have, like, text evidence between us that you were like, we should make a game about animal mating. because, and, you know, I think, make like we mentioned at the beginning of this, making games is just, like, feels natural to us. Not at, like, a professional level, but it just felt like something we could do and have fun with. And then it kind of just spiraled from there.
Great. So how did you come up with the idea of making it more of a party game than like a Trivial Pursuit sit down and think about it? What was the party part of it aspect?
So I think that what captivated us initially was like the humor in the facts that we were learning and in the photos we were seeing. And so we wanted to find a way to like recreate the shock value and joy that this information was bringing us, and we felt like a party game that was like very comedic and light would be the best way to recreate the vibe and the energy that we were having in our text chats and video chats during the pandemic. We felt like that was, you know, the best way to get that vibe across.
Yeah, so you like wanted to share the joy you got from it with everyone.
Yes, exactly. And that was like a central part of what we kept coming back to when we were making the game. There was so much trial and error while we were making it, figuring out the mechanics. And we just kept coming back to like, we need to make sure that this is hilarious and fun and light.
So like, in the process, what is the process like? Like, obviously you had to do loads of research, and like, how are you gaining the information, culling the information, deciding what's going in, what works, what, just describe the process a bit, please.
Yes. Yeah. So this was like so we started this in 2020. And so the first like 3 years were a lot of research. And so I read just so many books. It became like a hyper focus. We both have ADHD, and I think both of our brains just were like locked in on the dopamine and excitement from this. And so, yes, it started with just so much research and putting everything into a huge spreadsheet with just hundreds and hundreds of pieces of information that were fun, hilarious, educational. And then transferring it into the mechanics then was like the next step, which was like 2023. I think we were like, all right, we probably have done enough research. And then now we need to like put this into something. And so we tried just so many things, and it was demoralizing at times because we like could feel that there was something there that could become a game. But we tried just so many things that were like utter failures. Like just the two of us were like, this is boring. This is boring. This is so like boring.
Playing one of our tests at 11 o'clock at night, just like not having a good time. So tired. We got to do something with this. It can be so fun.
Did you ever think that you were like too close to it? Did you bring other people in to try it? And like, what sort of feedback were you getting from other people?
Yeah. So at this stage, it was really the two of us and our partners as well. So because we wanted to kind of wait until we felt like we had something before we brought it to other people. And so after a lot of this back and forth, then we started to see that there was the Zoom guessing that we mentioned that was part of Mind Trap was always there.
You would have an image that we zoom, like the image, for example, of the whales, you'd zoom in, do a small part of the image, and then the other person or the players of the team would have to guess what the animal is that was zoomed in on. So that was kind of the first like mechanic that we knew would probably end up in the game because it was so much fun, but then the other mechanics is what we were struggling with.
Yes. So then that's where we then came to this, like, so there's
three other types. There's number guessing, multiple choice, and then drawing. And so we kind of locked in on that and then started, you know, play testing then.
Yeah, and around 2024, we had like a more finalized version of the game that we started playing initially with just like close friends and family. And then, you know, once we felt good about that, we started the process for actual like art and packaging and production and everything that that entails.
And is it like a team game or is it everyone for themselves? And like, how does the scoring work for it?
Yeah, so we designed the game to be somewhat flexible, whether you want to play either everyone all together or in two teams. And so it's basically a race where if you played with two teams, both teams would, everyone plays simultaneously. And then you keep score with the two teams and you're racing around a compass.
Nice.
So I was thinking that when I think of like animal mating, it kind of brings me back to like when like teenage boys like meeting around is like laughing about and joking. And you keep bringing up how like you want this game to be fun. Was it hard to walk like the tight line of like making it fun but not making it silly fun, where it's just silly kids laughing about it, but making it fun, educational? Was that hard?
That's a great question. Sorry, I don't mean to keep jumping in. I love that. So I think that one of the things that's interesting about making a game is that you put it out there and then it becomes whatever the group wants it to become. And so I'm guessing that there are going to be groups that play it like that. Ultimately, so every single question is cited with to a research study. And so it's, I think just the fact that it is just so based in science, I think just inherently, even if it is just a group of teenage boys chuckling about it, it's all, they're laughing about scientific research. And so if it engages them, I don't know, that's my take. What do you think?
Yeah, Asta? Yeah, I agree. I think we also had like some purposes that we wanted to come across in the game. And so like one of them, I think, is like encouraging people to be more open about sex and science. And so I think that even if people are like giggling while playing the game, ultimately like having the conversations that you're playing in the game will to some extent, like, accomplish the goal that we were hoping for of, like, discussing science and having more open conversations about mating and whether that relates to human sexuality or not.
Well, and the format makes the information stickier, I would think, too, where it's just, like, you are going to remember this stuff presented in this way. So even if you are laughing about it, you're going to retain this knowledge and be able to carry it forward, whether it's funny to you or not.
Yes.
It's just going to be in there.
Yes. And I mean, every question that we have, like the front part of the card is the actual question. And on the back, we have the answer and then like a further like fun fact or more information or background for the question. And so I think, even if you're laughing about it, you are getting actual scientific information. And so often during the play testing, we saw that there was a lot of like conversation and debate and laughter during the like question answering portion of it. And then by the time you get to the back, get the answer revealed and then get further information, it's a lot of like, oh, huh, wow, that's really interesting. And so you kind of get both, which is like, that's what we love. We love like learning things and we love laughing. And so it's like, it feels like a great combination.
Great. I'm going to do a quick reset here. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking with Krista and Gina of Fascinary Games about their animal mating-themed party game, Mate. Also, if you would like to comment on the show live, you can use our OLARC messaging system on kbu.fm. So you talked, when we talked before, about using principles of universal design in designing your game. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So my professional background is in science and engineering adult education. I have a master's in adult and higher ed. And so Universal Design for Learning is a educational framework that's goal is to make learning experiences accessible for people with varying learning styles and abilities. And its central goal is removing barriers. And so the main tenet of Universal Design for Learning that we used is like flexibility and variability. And so the game Mate allows like for flexible movement. So we worked really hard on creating this, the central like score keeping board piece can actually be like passed around. So you can play like on the couch, on the floor. And there's also, you can choose, do you want to play cooperatively or collaboratively? And then also there's varying ways to like think through and answer questions. You can speak or not speak. And so we basically built in a lot of choice and flexibility for the players so that they can remove barriers to be able to play. And then in addition, we use accessibility best practices, which is, you know, part of that for the components. So we like everything is 12 point and more font size. For the scoring, we use like tactile scoring. And so it's like immersed in the world, but also tactile so that someone with like a visual disability could easily keep score. Yeah.
I love that because, like I said, I work with children who might have disabilities, and sometimes it's hard to find a board game that can help keep them occupied and that they can use.
Yes.
So it's fun that you're making a game that anyone can use, especially if it's a scientific game as well.
Yes.
So they can get in it and learn more while being able to play a game. That is amazing. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we both, like I said before, have ADHD. And so I think we came in also with this goal of making a game that's like very accessible for people with ADHD while also being playable by everyone.
So there are, there's a lot of animals out there in the world, and you could include, you could talk about any of the animals, any of the animals' bits and pieces. And how did you pick like the facts you included and what animals and what made the ones better than others, if there were?
That's such a good question. I think our primary goal when making the game and writing the questions was balance. And so we wanted to make sure that we had a good balance of like mammals and insects and birds so that it wasn't so focused on any one particular type of animal. For like the questions themselves, we wanted to have kind of different vibes. So some of them are like wild guesses where you're just really taking like a stab in the dark at it. But then there's other questions where they are actually possible to deduce the answer, or maybe you actually already know the answer. So we wanted to make sure that there was some like satisfaction of like, oh yeah, I know this one, or I can figure this one out based on something I know about something else. And then also for sex and sexuality, we wanted to make sure that we had balance of like female-centered questions, because so much of animal mating research is male-centric and focused on male genitalia. And so we wanted to make sure that we had female-centered questions, and then also feature like queer mating, intersex animals, so we had balance in that regard. And then also for like the humor itself, we wanted to have balance. So there's some questions that are just like real shock value, like wow, that's wild, that's hilarious. There's some that are more just like amusing where you might get a little chuckle out of it, and then some that are just like genuinely really interesting that like you might think about for a while and like want to dive into a study. And like Gina said, each question is we have like a sources page on our website. And so if you are interested to learn more about a question, you can go to that page on our website and actually like read the study where we got that information from.
Yeah, I never really thought about it, but I read you have an article on your website, Fascinary Games. And I had never really thought about like the fact that so much research is from the male point of view. And it's just like, you talk about like the male duck having a corkscrew shaped penis, but you don't talk about what the flip side of that means. And it's like, yeah, obviously. So I think it's great that you're also like sort of acknowledging this discrepancy in the scientific community. How do you know when you have enough cards? Is it just dictated by like, oh, when we print this game, we want to make sure we're maximizing the space in the card printer, so we need to make sure it's a multiple of this, or like, how did you figure that out?
Yes. So it was so hard to narrow it down. And again, I think it was like a balancing act. So the like size and weight of the packaging, because cards are really heavy. And so like, you know, we didn't want the game to be like 5 pounds. So that was part of it. And then there's also like manufacturing standards. And so we ultimately did 2 tarot decks. So like the cards are actually just tarot size and it's 2 decks. And then the third was like number of game plays for the price value. And so wanting the people who buy it to feel like they got, you know, that they got their money's worth for it. And so we ended up through a lot of playtesting determined that it's like 16 to 20 cards per round of gameplay. And so there's like around 7 in the base set.
Enough for 7 gameplays.
Yes, yes, thank you.
Provided you're playing with like the same group of people over and over, I imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, because that was definitely a question I had, where it's like, the thing about facts is once you know them, you're familiar with them. You may not remember them, but you might get triggered and remember, oh, yes, I do know this one.
Right,
and
yes.
So, like, how do you deal with the knowledge that there's sort of a finite depth for where your game can go? Do you, like, have plans for more material?
Yeah, yeah. So, again, we thought about this so much. So, I think thinking a lot about like legacy games and you'd mentioned like escaped style room games. So I think we kind of like see it as fitting in those where you do kind of play it once and then give it to a friend or keep it. The box is beautiful, so keep it on your shelf. But I will say that there are people who have replayed questions and actually said they had a lot of fun because some of the question types are like drawing, you know, where that is going to be different each time. But then we do have some ideas for expansions. We've had people ask for like a pride pack where it's all like queer animals, which I think would be really cool. So yeah, I would say in the works. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like sometimes the fun is when you know the answer, but you can't quite remember what it is, and you get confused between 2 pieces, and you're like, oh, which one is it? Which one is it? I feel like that might happen quite a lot as well. That happens to me a lot.
I also think there's something to be said for knowing the answer and getting to anticipate other people's reaction to who don't know the answer. So, like, maybe you're just the game master and reading things
to
everyone.
So we have gotten to be that for the last few years because when we play test, we're not really playing because we, like, intimately know every answer and know the researcher that, you know, did the study and everything. But it has been absolutely delightful, like you said, watching other people, like, see the different things they draw or the different guesses that they have.
Yeah, seeing how they deduce. I think the numbers-based questions are so funny to see how people deduce them. So, like, one example is, like, figuring out how many miles per hour a duck's penis comes out of their body when they're ready to mate. And just people discussing the miles per hour has been hilarious, like, seeing how they discuss it and comparing it to, like, the speed of a car. And,
it's so fun.
It's great.
So you mentioned playtesting and that you used your family members at the beginning. Did you just stick with your family members for the whole way through, or did you use like playtester groups when you got it more built out?
Yeah, we did it like an onion. We like started very small, like just the two of us, and then brought in our partners and then our best friends and then our like friends and family. And then we did, it was very scary at first, but we started with like neighbors. And so we would just be like, hey, want to play our game about Animal Meeting? And so many people were like, yeah, we do. Like, Portland's awesome in that way. And then we also did go to some playtest groups. So there's like a Portland playtest group that was like, we got such great feedback from other game designers and players as well. Yeah.
That's great. And I do want to comment, like, how did you commission the art, or how did you find like someone to do the art? Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, so there are 2 components to the art of our game. One are animal block prints, which Gina's friend made. Robin Corbo is a Portland-based muralist and artist, and so she made these incredible block prints of different animals that are used throughout the game. And then Mi Trung is a graphic designer, also Portland based, and she did the illustration and graphic design for like the packaging and boxes for the game.
Yeah, and we had a very specific vision in mind. Yes. For the animals and the packaging and everything, but we're just so lucky to work with both Robin and me to like bring it to life.
So good. So before we kick you out and make you disappear, please let everyone know how they can find you and tell them a bit more about your game.
Great, thanks. So our game Mate was released in December of this year. It's Mate, the party game for feral naturalists, and you can buy it on our website, fascinarygames.com. You can also Google Mate party game and it should come up. We're also on Instagram and TikTok at Fascinary Games, which is spelled FASCINARY.
I mistyped that twice trying to email you two in anticipation of this, and I was just like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I do this?
We probably should have picked something easier to spell, but FASCINARY.
In my case, I think it was just stupid fingers.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't think it was the game.
It's like fascinate.
Yeah.
Fascinate, true, yeah.
Thank you so much for being here, Gina and Krista. We really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. And you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you find those unexpected things in the games. Have a good one.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.